sounds great.
The numbers are going up, which is the direction you want them to go.
That's right. And we want them to continue going up.
Continue. We want even the red light to be on.
That's right.
Look at us.
We are learning.
We're getting good at this.
Well, we're learning.
Until we get some new equipment.
There you go.
You know.
Well, then there's more to learn, that's all.
Yep. Hey, yeah. You know what? That's what we're about, Mark.
It is.
This is what we're about. That's why we do this. So
it is.
Keep learning. So,
yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
What are we doing, Mark?
Well, you know,
I'm afraid to have you say it.
Are you? Are you even just afraid of the word itself?
No.
Okay.
No, actually, I think I moved on from that. But, man, there are some topics that we avoid for a while because they are, you'll understand.
Yeah.
Very polarizing. So there's certainly conversations in the zeitgeist that make sense to be had in this context, right?
Yeah. Welcome to How I See It with me, Mark Pratt, and
Justin Sternberg. This is a podcast that works to counter cultural polarization through thoughtful conversations.
And for me, you know, one of those words is transgenderism, you know, and I think part of it, you know, is a personal, I mean, of course, that's why we do the podcast.
Yeah.
This is how we see it for, or how I see it for a reason, as far as that goes. And I think, you know, in this context, we do this because we desire to offer hope.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we cover a topic, you know, I believe we want to always bring it back to the aspect of, okay, yes, in this topic, no matter whether it's, you know, as we've talked about so many other topics like pride or leadership or, you know, those kind of things, it's not a desire to single out and say, you're wrong on that, but it's a desire to be able to share a perspective that hopefully offers hope, freedom, you know, from circumstances or even
or
from
towards.
Yeah, from the, I guess the dogma is too wrong, too strong, but you know, the thoughts that keep me captive,
the ruts.
Mm-hmm. I think that's where we're at. That's where I'm at. And I want to convey that, you know, right off the bat, because I recognize everybody, you know, knows somebody who is, you know, living or struggling with this topic of, you know, homosexuality, you know, lesbian lifestyle, you know, transgenderism.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the word transgenderism more so, I believe, just based on the fact that I see, you know, with my clientele, with my the people I work with, I see more and more confusion in younger kids, in the, you know, in the adolescent era. And, you know, I just see that confusion, and I recognize how culture feeds into that confusion. And I also recognize, you know, in certain areas, to have a conversation like you and I might have could be mislabeled as hate speech in such a way that, you know, gets someone in trouble, you know, and it's not a desire to hate anyone. And yet it's a desire to share how I see it in such a way that hopefully offers hope. That's my premise. And I think, as you alluded to, you know, you and I think have a obligation, opportunity to be able to talk in such a way that says, okay, this topic can be talked about. Transgenderism can be talked about. And
it's important to talk about it too. And I think, you know, when you brought it up as a potential subject, it's very much like, I don't know, do we want to touch that?
Yeah.
You know?
Go ahead.
Again, I'm just going to reiterate that I think it's important to not shy away from conversations that are culturally relevant, because there is an opportunity to communicate how I see it, right?
Sure.
And so I think to Yeah. Don't forget what you were going to say, by the way.
No. I'm with you. I'm not.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say that something that's very important for us to recognize and have, you know, kind of a understanding of ourselves is that we are two middle-aged white guys. Mm-hmm. And that is the view that we are offering.
Sure.
Okay. We know that. Yep. Right. We know that's true in every episode, right?
Sure.
There's a particular viewpoint that particular status,
yes,
conveys a large part of what we see.
Sure.
And then we convey what we see. That's how we see it. Now,
sure,
we like to think that we're, you know, very enlightened and we can see all sides of the view. And we try and do that. And that's the goal of this, you know, podcast. But until we have guests in the room who can offer a perspective that we just don't have, this, yeah, is how I see it,
yeah,
you know? And I think what's important about that is not necessarily that you listen to what I think I see and, sure, Mark sees, although I'm glad you do, and hopefully you find what we think and see valuable. But the idea is to demonstrate how to have these conversations again about, you know, conversations, you know,
sure,
have these conversations about polarizing subjects,
topics,
right?
Sure.
And that they would be done in a thoughtful way.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. No, and as far as that goes, as I think about what you just shared, as being, you know, 53, white male, that kind of thing, I think about it so much also from remembering back to being an adolescent, to being a teenager. And, you know, for me, and this is how I see it. For me, growing up, having experienced sexual abuse, and therefore, you know, my own sexual immorality, you know, that became pornography and stuff like that later on. That's part of what I'm looking back, and I'm remembering, you know, that personal confusion. And I think, you know, when I'm working, this is my experience. When I'm working with, I'll bring it back to scripture. I think scripture can be misinterpreted, you know, in some ways, because it's kind of like, well, did God really say that about this person or this group of people? You know, did he really say that about homosexuality? Did he really say that? And I think, you know, that's a theme throughout scripture kind of. And I think it starts in Genesis 3. Where, you know, Satan comes up to Adam and Eve, you know, and basically said, well, did God really say that? You follow me? And I think when that happens, or when we experience hurt, when we experience, you know, difficulty, it calls the love of God into question. And I think, you know, and that's where I'm
sharing.
Yeah. And that's where I'm sharing from, because when I look at, you know, scripture, and I look at these, you know, if you will, these lists, you know, that include homosexuality, and I want to keep it broader in transgenderism, but
sexual immorality and,
yeah,
all that. Yeah.
And I recognize that in that listing, if you will, it typically starts out with something to the effect of sexual immorality. You know what I'm saying? And then it goes on down to, you know, men who practice homosexuality and you know, and liars, mm-hmm, and thieves and that kind of, mm-hmm, thing. And then it goes on. I'm thinking especially of, like, in 1 Corinthians 6, it goes on to say something to the effect of, and so were many of you. You know what I'm saying? To where I think it's a part of who we are as a nature, that we have choices. You know, and I think, you know, we talked about epigenetics last week, which, you know, people, but I think that kind of rolled out. It's been that kind of process for me. And I've been able to really recognize how, when I'm working with, whether it's adults or adolescents, I'm hearing of the hurt that goes into this dynamic that tends to skew my view of gender. You follow me? And I'm willing to recognize that from my own personal life, you know, that when I, you know, based on what I experienced, I recognized that early on, it skewed my view of gender. And I'll say, you know, sexual immorality itself, you know, if we're looking at pornography even, you know, it skews my view. I tend to objectify women. And unfortunately, that's not just a simple thing. It's an evolving dynamic, because what started out as a simple image, you know, I tend to want more of that. And it skews my view of who I am as a male, you know, and I'll say created in God's image, you know, Christ-like masculinity, if I may say so, you know, and it skews my view of Christ-like femininity, you know, and I think when we experience this hurt, you know, and in many ways, and that's my personal experience. And then as I talk with other people who struggle with transgenderism and lifestyle choices, I personally can say I have yet to talk with someone who struggles in that arena who didn't also experience a level of sexual perpetration, whether it's abuse, whether it's, you know, experiencing their own personal trauma of some type from a sexual nature. That's my experience. And I'm willing to recognize, as I had been perpetrated against, I'm willing to recognize how that affected me, and I'm willing to extend that. Likely affects others. It likely affects other females. It likely affects other males. And, you know, even as if we want to go on the other end of the spectrum to a certain degree, even as I work, you know, and you've worked with many males, you know, who are dealing with pornography and sexual addiction and that kind of thing. And I want to recognize that's part of that skewing. And so I can recognize how personally, when I'm talking with, you know, I'll say, a young male or a young female, if they have been perpetrated against, you know, it really, especially by the opposite sex, you know, I'm just going to use a female, for example, if I may, you know, young female, and she's been perpetrated against by adult male. I'm going to recognize, and I'm hearing from her how, you know, that men are just gross. Yeah. Men are, you know, the devil, if you will. Yeah. And I recognize how that tends to lean or skew that view of gender, you know, based on that human hurt. And that's the part that hurts me, because I recognize that was a person who was perpetrated against. Mm-hmm. And, you know, therefore now, there's so much wrestling that goes with that, you know, and in our world that sees things, you know, so polarizing, you know, we have to be able to say, okay, what do I do with this? Mm-hmm. Is there something wrong with me? And, you know, and unfortunately that's where shame goes, is there is something wrong with me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not the fact that there's something, you know, that this other person that perpetrated against me is acting out of the flesh, if you will.
Yeah. And it is uncanny how often that happens, where, you know, someone is abused sexually in one way or another, whether they're a child or a woman at a party, right?
Sure.
Or whatever it is. It is uncanny how often that story includes that shame of, oh, that was my fault.
Sure.
And, you know, depending on the context you hear the story, maybe there's some admission that, no, it's not, but that you still see that they feel that.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
It is uncanny to me that's, as someone who has not experienced sexual abuse, you would think, of course it's not your fault. And, you know, you poor thing. And hopefully by now you've realized or whatever. It's like, there's something deep there.
Sure.
That we both seen and experienced in these stories, that it doesn't come out easily, that shame.
Yeah.
And you and I look at these stories objectively and go, yeah, but there is no shame there. It was, like you said, perpetrated. It was put on you.
Yeah.
And then you had to live with that. And that's not There's nothing you did there.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
To perpetrate that. Yeah. And yet,
go ahead.
Good luck talking them into believing.
Sure. And I think that's where, you know, my desire is to share my personal experience. It's not that I'm talking to someone to try and convert or change them. I just want to recognize that, yes, because, and here's the other part for me. I recognize that I was perpetrated against, and yet I'm going to admit that there was a part of me that perpetrated against others. Mm-hmm. If I'm being really, you know, transparent, because I took that hurt and I took it to someone else sometimes, you know, and I could say, you know, if we want to look at this, and this is one of the aspects of how I see it that has really kind of changed who I am or the way I think about things, because now prior to how I see it, I didn't always follow the paths, or I'll say the industry, the money, if you will, that can be, you know, beneficial by some of these things that are really hurting people. So if I'm going to look at, you know, my past, I'm going to recognize I was perpetrated against. And yet I'm going to also recognize, as I've grown, I've also perpetrated against others. And I'll say that, you know, because, you know, I've, you know, had inappropriate relationships, you know, and I also see, you know, pornography as an industry that perpetrates against young females. You know, it's part of a sex trafficking dynamic. And I can't, for me personally, I don't typically say can't, but it's very difficult for me not to see this as all interconnected. Because I think at times, and this is where my desire to offer freedom comes from, I think when we live out of that hurt, you know, it's counter to, you know, relationship. And I think, you know, as we look at scripture as those lists, I think all of those things are counter to relationship. And ultimately, that's a matter of the heart. And I think that's where God's greatest concern is anything that turns our heart away from all that he has to offer. And it, you know, as we talk about the epigenetics, you know, I have to wrestle with that free will for me personally to say, okay, yeah, I did choose that behavior. You follow me? So therefore, I am accountable and responsible for that. And as I recognize that personally, I have to be able to say, okay, I'm not alone in that. That's a human dynamic. And so when I can look at that free will, and for me personally, I have to be able to say, okay, so I did choose. So now I have to, you know, make amends and for those that I perpetrated against. And, you know, and it's in my benefit to forgive others who have perpetrated against me, you know? And so for me, those become free will choices. And I think for me, that's that freedom and hope that we can find, whether it's through, you know, sexual immorality, sexual addiction, or, you know, a lifestyle, and coming back to the transgenderism, I'm thinking about it in this context of my experience, you know, through growing up and through getting my education. And as I understand, you know, this promoting of transgenderism, do you remember anorexia? You remember how in some ways
it bulimia
and bulimia, it was a pretty big deal when I was getting my education early on. We don't hear that much about it anymore. And it's not that it doesn't exist, but I can remember early on and learning that the idea of anorexia, they started treating it in groups, because what they recognized was it was a body, well, body dysmorphia or body image type thing, to where when that person saw themselves in the mirror, we would look at them and see a healthy or possibly even thinner person. But the way they viewed their image was different. Mm-hmm. And they viewed that healthy, thinner body as still being fat, obese. You follow me? And I want to recognize that, as you know, we've researched this transgenderism type dynamic, that same body image is what drives or promotes it. Hmm. And it, and in a lot of cases, it still has to do with that perception, mm-hmm, that I'm different. I can't connect with people. You know, I have this inability to relate to this gender, these individuals. I don't relate well. You follow me? Based on this thing that is wrong with me, you know, from my perspective. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, and this is heavy on my heart. Unfortunately, the church hasn't done a good job of connecting with individuals. And, you know, and I'll even, you know, as I work with adolescents, you know, I'm hearing, you know, well, it's the kids in church that are meaner to me than my bi friends or my, yeah, you know, transgender friends, because they accept me for who I am. Yeah. You know, and that hurts my heart,
yeah,
you know, as a follower, mm-hmm, to be able to say, okay, yeah, how can we have these conversations in a way that says, okay, yeah, I'm accepting, I want to accept all of who you are. And it's my desire, mm-hmm, to do that in a way that offers, you know, freedom and hope. And we can talk, and, mm-hmm, and we can be friends. Mm-hmm. And I'm also willing to accept you as a person, mm-hmm, and still recognize that, yeah, there's reasons why we make the choices we make. And when we understand that, your choices make perfect sense.
Yeah.
But not all of our choices are always healthy.
Yeah. Just inject a little bit here.
Go right ahead. I think, sorry to.
No, you're good. Yeah, I love what you're having to say, and I agree. I think, to that point about just kind of how culturally there's a problem with acceptance, right?
Yes.
From quote unquote the good people.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Quote unquote. I yes. like that. Yes.
And yet, if you think about it, if you're someone who's taken the path of, you know, LGBTQ, yep, one of those versions, and you're now on the other side, what you want from people around you is acceptance for your, yes, choice. And so therefore, what you're naturally going to be better at than most, mm, is giving acceptance for other people's, yes, choices, right?
Exactly.
And so it doesn't blow my mind, right?
Right.
To find out that sometimes, or many times, kids can find safety,
yes,
in the net of a group of friends, LGBTQ friends,
sure,
who are there to accept each other and love each other.
Yes,
and exactly, like you said, it is painful to see and admit that it's more likely that a kid is going to find love and acceptance, yes, in a group of LGBTQ friends, yes, than at youth group.
Yes, exactly.
And I've heard many stories of how kids left youth group feeling ostracized,
sure,
abused,
yes,
you know, made fun of, just all kinds of bad things,
sure.
And I think one thing that we, you know, one of those polar sides, mm-hmm, does kind of maybe the church world that hasn't quite given into having these conversations and understanding how it's possible, they simply go, it's not possible, therefore,
sure,
it's ridiculous, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to hear the stories, listen, get in on the conversations,
yes,
understand what's happening, because it could be that I'm the parent of a child who, you know, talks in certain ways about LGBTQ community in a very,
sure,
judgmental way. And my kid learns that, and they understand that that community is meant to, you're meant to be disgusted at them. You, mm-hmm, are meant to consider yourself much, much, much better than them because you don't have that problem. You're, mm-hmm, meant, you know, this is what's modeled,
sure,
maybe to my kid. how am I supposed to expect my kid to provide a loving and accepting atmosphere to those kids? Well, in a lot of cases, as parents, we say, don't do that. I don't want you to be friends with them. I don't want you to accept them. I don't want you to be in any close vicinity from them because, you know, it might be contagious.
Sure.
You know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, there's this fear factor that kind of goes into it. And of course, I don't think that's true of every family.
No.
You know, but I think that is certainly something that is happening and you can see it. And like I said, it's not surprising when you see someone with trauma combined with addiction,
sure.
right? Who's desperately seeking acceptance and a release from some of the shame.
Sure.
To find some safe havens, right?
Sure.
And again, it's not surprising to me that that becomes a safe haven in a group of people who say, I don't want to look at your problems. I want to celebrate who you are. You
sure.
know? I yeah. mean, how refreshing would that be?
Sure.
And also, as you were talking about trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trauma is one of the biggest things in our life that can kind of transform us.
Sure.
Right?
No doubt.
And another one is addiction.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
You think about, you mm-hmm. know, just all the stories of addiction we've heard and how it can change someone, right? It's like,
sure.
Everyone listening can think of someone that, you know, they're not who they used to be. They transformed due to an addiction. And thinking about sexual addiction, again, I have a lot of familiarity sure. with that concept. That's also something I struggled with, pornography, the whole thing. And like you said, I've worked through that through Celebrate Recovery, through the work that I've done. And therefore, on the other side, I'm able to do a lot of 12-step work, working with other people and
sure.
just learning about how that same problem, you know, exists in so many different forms.
Sure.
And I'm just mostly looking, you know, exclusively talking to males.
Sure.
Right. About this issue and seeing how vast mm-hmm. the struggle can be there.
Sure.
And I recognize, like every addiction, like you said, it starts with a single image. Right?
Sure, it can.
I recognize with every addiction that it continues to grow in its need, in its
sure.
hunger, right?
Sure.
That's the nature of addiction. That is probably the single defining characteristic of what we would call addiction, is something that doesn't get solved with the next usage.
Sure.
It needs more, it needs bigger, it needs better, you know?
Sure.
And as you said, that image is not enough next time. Now you need it to move. Now you need it to, you know, you need it to continue to get stronger in order to give you the same high.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
That's the diminishing returns of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so you combine something as traumatic as trauma in your life.
Sure.
That transforms your mind, gives you that seed of shame. And then you add something as transforming as addiction that says, I need more, I need more, I need more. I mean, it's not surprising that you would continue to explore beyond your gender, beyond, you know, whatever.
And, sure.
And again, the pornographic industry
mm-hmm.
benefits
sure.
from that addiction and they perpetrate it. They say, well, we know, you know, the next step is this. So we're going to start, you know, producing this. And we know what the next step is this. So we're going to produce this. I say all that to say the jump is not that high.
Sure.
You know, for many people.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if you're already starting at a deficit of some abuse
sure.
early or, mm-hmm. you know, at any point, and you also struggle with an addiction or you struggle, again, it's not that big of a leap to get to a place where you need an escape.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And I do think that's one thing that I see offered in that lifestyle.
Sure.
And that doesn't mean an escape from pain or struggle or whatever. And in fact, if you were to say that to someone who's chosen that lifestyle, they likely would be angry at the concept that you're saying they chose a path
yeah.
to ease their pain because they say, no, you don't understand the pain that it requires just to live my life.
Agreed.
Right?
Yeah.
And yet there is something there. There's sure. an acceptance. There's a pathway that feels safer
yep.
than the pathway we're on, you know?
Sure.
And I think I say all these things because I want there to be some empathy.
Sure.
And that's not the same thing as acceptance or in this case, we want acceptance, you yep. know, but that's not the same thing as to say, like, I agree with that choice.
Sure.
But you should be able to get to a place where you can say, I understand that choice, and I guess I can't say I blame you.
Yes.
You know, I can't even say if I was in the same position and went through the same things, I wouldn't make that choice.
Sure.
We need to be able to get there.
Exactly.
And I think there's a problem right now, specifically in the church, where we're not willing to go there.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it's scary, because it's that bad, it's whatever. It's like, no. If we want to have those relationships, if we want to be able to offer that same level of acceptance in those circles, we have to be able to go there. We have to be able to understand. That's what empathy is all about.
Sure.
Right? And we've talked about open-mindedness before, and like, don't let your brain get open-minded, your brains fall out or whatever.
Sure.
Like, that's not what we're saying.
Right.
Or that's not what I'm saying.
No, I hear you.
You know, I'm saying be willing to go there so that you can understand how someone gets to where they get. And therefore, that will naturally loosen some of the grit of judgment in your heart, in your mind.
Yeah.
Your thoughts.
No, that's exactly. And I think about it in this, I guess I think about it sometimes in an aspect of false intimacy when I think of, you know, sexual immorality, because I think there is a false acceptance that pornography offers. Mm-hmm. You know, to men as they're, you know, being, you know, as that view is being skewed, it's like this image offers me acceptance, but yet there's no reality to it.
Yeah.
You know, if I met that actual physical person in life, they would see all my flaws the same way that, you know, other people do. And there wouldn't, that acceptance wouldn't be there. That unconditional acceptance wouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that also, you know, goes to the other side of the spectrum, if you will, where, you know, it's between same gender dynamics. And I think there is that, like you shared, there is that acceptance that's offered there. And it, I would dare say it's more real, of course, because that's another person than just an image, you know, that kind of thing. And I think, for me, that's what ties the whole thing together, you know, between the, you know, LGBT community and you know, and this far, because I believe it is a spectrum and its view. And what it does is it skews our view of the purpose of gender in such a way that it makes it to where, yeah, that doesn't really matter. And yet, we'd recognize in some cases it does matter. And I think, you know, that's where, you know, that acceptance of the individual. And I would say, you know, regardless of what, you know, the issue becomes, that's what we're looking for. Like you shared, is that acceptance. Mm-hmm. And for me, a part of the issue is because, you know, my concern, And here's how I see it from a spiritual standpoint. My concern are women and children. Okay, because at the heart of what we're talking about from my perspective are kids who are living in confusion. And, you know, and they're taught, you know, it's not the fact that they're talking about being bi or trans or, you know, those kind of things. I don't have any issues with kids talking about that, because I want to recognize in some ways there is a healthiness to having this conversation over gender. And yet I also recognize there is a promotion of, you know, this industry. And, you know, as far as recognizing there is an industry that's also tied to transgenderism.
Yep.
And, you know, we can put a link in. There's an article I read, you know, Transgender Leviathan. And it goes back to, you know, how early on. And I don't think we're here by mistake. I think, you know, so much of what we experience today are based on choices that were made 30 years ago. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we're thinking this is something new. We've been, you know, societies have been here before. You follow me? And to that degree, I think, you know, I was reading early on, like, and it comes back to that choice dynamic to a certain degree, free will. Ground Zero was a kid who's trying to think of the operation where you circumcision. There you go. Circumcision went bad, and they basically said, "Well, we can just remake his, you know, anatomy, if you will, and turn that individual into a girl." And they had a twin, and it just, you follow me? And it just went bad, from bad to worse, based on this fact that, you know, we can just change someone, you know, we can avoid this wiring, if you will, and just change the outside, and the inside will follow. And it just went bad. And, you know, there was the individual, I think his brother even ended up committing suicide. You know, it was just a tough thing. And the, you know, and the therapist that was dealing with him had him, you know, inappropriate relations. I'm just trying to keep it, you know, on the PG-13 rating here, but, you know, inappropriate relationships, even between these siblings, to, you know, firm up this image of what gender, you know, and we can make this happen. And it just went bad. And you know, in that process, and then for me, my concern with the industry is, like you were saying, I want more. And what the industry does in that way is, if there's something wrong with me, then I have my body parts changed. Mm-hmm. You follow me? And that in and of itself is an expense. But yet, and this is a part of how I see it that's transformed me, you know, I'm looking at the industry dynamic and I don't like it. Because what happens is, you know, it's not just adults that are being able to make this choice, if you will. Mm-hmm. Now it's affecting children and kids. And, you know, and we have this issue in our culture where, you know, one parent is basically saying, hey, you know, Joey or Joni or, you know, needs to change. They want to change and they're, you know, 10, 12 years old.
Right.
So we're talking about, you know, giving them hormone suppressing, you know, medication. And from my perspective, that's counter to that individual's opportunity to choose, if you will, based on where they're at in life. And that's how I'm looking at it as a 50-year-old. If I had been able to make so many choices, adult choices, at the age of, you know, 10, 12, you know, I'd been a completely different person, you know. Yeah. And then, so I think of it from that perspective. Go ahead. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, like, if your 12-year-old said, I want a tattoo of a stegosaurus on my bicep, you'd probably be like, wait till you're 18. You can go get that tattoo of a stegosaurus. You know, whatever. You know, you kind of understand that they're not of the age that it makes sense to make life-altering choices, right?
Yes.
And you might know this better than me. I don't know that particular issue of parents forcing the matter is like the biggest issue right now. I think is starting to happen, right? Like, I think there's,
Agree.
And I say that just because I don't want to make it sound like this is happening all over the place.
I hear where you're coming
from. Think is happening is that industry, like you said, there's an industry that's growing here. And, you know, this isn't, I don't think either of us have the desire to say you're being duped by this industry, but I also think we do have a desire to say, just like pornography, just like Weight Watchers, just like whatever, there are industries that benefit from our dysfunctions.
Yes,
right?
That's
and
exactly
to not be aware of that and to kind of just take their word, like, you know, this is good for you or whatever. There are many aspects of this industry that it's in their best interest to say, this is good for you and you need to pursue this.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then it becomes culturally, you know, understood. Like, yeah, I heard on a commercial, this is good for you. So I'm with that, right? Yeah. I agree. This is good for you. And it becomes, you know, perpetrated culturally. And I think that's what we're seeing, right?
Sure.
We're seeing a natural acceptance, and not just acceptance, but almost like a pushing of, hey, maybe this is a choice that would benefit you, you know? Sure. And I think it's just so important to understand the gears at work, right?
Yeah.
And so that you can at least be aware of that as these considerations are happening or whatever. And also, like I said, there are industries, billion-dollar industries, mm-hmm. in just about every area where we're discontent with who we are.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
There's liposuction, there's plastic surgery, there's whatever, right?
Right.
You know, and I'm talking about cosmetic things or, yep. you know, whatever, not necessarily, obviously, like vision.
Sure.
You know, there's a practical benefit to having better vision. It's usually not due to cosmetics, but that happens too, right?
Sure.
I don't like what I look like in glasses, but the point is, if there is a place where an industry can recognize, hey, humans aren't happy with themselves this way.
Yes.
There will be an industry born up to solve that.
Sure.
And I think, again, it's so important to understand that. And also to understand that these industries then become culturally relevant enough that it starts seeping into culture.
Sure.
So it's no longer just the industry pushing it. And I think it's important to say it's not like this huge conspiracy where this industry is, you know, basically exactly. puppeting all these people. No, I think it's reached a tipping point.
Sure.
To where it's now into some, and then not just from the industry. I also think there's, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's where my passion comes from for this topic is, you know, I'm talking with, you know, young kids, and they're planning on when I get, you know, they're, you know, 16, 13, you know, but when I get to be an adult, you know, I want to be able to have parts of my body removed so mm-hmm. I don't look so male, so I don't look so female, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, and we think about it, and I think about it from that aspect of, okay, you know, that's a major deal. That's a major expense to have that happen, to do that. And that's just the beginning. Mm-hmm. And here again, I'm in agreement with you that this, we're not saying, you know, people are duped, but when I'm looking at these adolescents and where their focus is shifting to, you know, kind of like, you know, the American nightmare, if you will, you know, that it's not the American dream anymore, you know, in some ways, because there's this sense that it's unattainable. And yet I'm also listening to these kids and young adults, and they're saying, okay, instead of desiring to, you know, have the house and the white picket fence, my desire is to have a surgery to change my body. And, you know, for me, that becomes a concern. Because, you know, it's like, where's that coming from? And I understand where it's coming from. And yet at the same time, that's just the beginning. If we're looking at an industry and, you know, that it doesn't even count, bring into effect the medications that will be for that person for a lifetime, the pharmaceutics involved. And, you know, and that's where I guess, you know, I'm not trying to go so far, but I'm thinking about how that changes a culture, you know, when that's really what my desire is. And it's based on this inability to find acceptance for who I am, the way I am, mm-hmm. and being able to recognize, okay, yeah, it may not be comfortable right now mm-hmm. to be who you are, but yet there's a purpose. There's a, you know, there's a reason why, you know, we're created the way we are. Mm-hmm. And we may not always understand it, and we especially don't understand it in the light of hurt mm-hmm. or you know, trauma, that kind of thing. And yet, from my perspective, we can trust the plan. Mm-hmm. You follow me? And there is hope. There is still, you know, as long as we're alive, there's still hope. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, I guess that's where I'm coming from. And I don't want to, like you were saying, I don't want to make it that, you know, the industry drives this, because I recognize, like you're saying, it where there is a hurt, where there is a habit, a hang up, there will be an industry to promote that. And that's sad to me. you know.
It is sad, but it's also the way of the earth, right? Like it's
sure.
kind of.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean that I have to avoid it, ignore it mm-hmm. based on what it is. You know, just because it's the way of the earth, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean that we can't do something about it.
Right.
That's yep. and that's where I'm at, you know, and that for me, that is about, you know, having the conversations and being able to recognize that there's a, you know, tremendous amount of hurt, you know, that goes along with this topic mm-hmm. and to add hurt to the hurt mm-hmm. is
yeah.
irresponsible from my perspective.
Agreed. Perfect word for it. I mean, I would even go so far as in some cases abusive, right? To perpetrate that. Yeah, that sounds like a good approach. We'll plan for that or whatever. I mean,
yeah.
I think in some cases it's abusive in the sense that that child, you're giving them the credit of an, you know, adult decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like the tattoo thing, but just way, way, way worse, right?
No,
because it's a life-altering decision. That's not just a physical thing and a part of the body that, you know, is a visual thing like a tattoo. I mean, it
yeah.
is a identity thing, right?
Yeah.
I lost my train of thought.
I could tell. It got derailed there for a moment. You back on track?
No, I lost
okay.
it.
Okay. Well,
I have some other thoughts, but I... Yeah.
And I guess where my thoughts go, and this is where I want to come back to, is I believe, as I shared at the beginning, you know, everybody knows somebody mm-hmm. who's affected by LGBTQ mm-hmm. type dynamics, transgenderism, you know. And I think that's the part that makes these topics so difficult. If I never knew anyone, you know, then I could it's like law. You know, because law can be, you know, given out or, you know, laid out in such a way that avoids the personal aspect. In other words, a law is fine with me as long as it doesn't affect me personally. And I think this topic is the same way. So we have to be, I believe we have to be able to deal with these issues in a case by case, person by person type dynamic. And, you know, and I think that's where the discussions come into play, having the difficult conversations with even people that I know in such a way that says, okay, tell me about your story. Talk with me and what did you experience? And personally for myself, I'm fine if someone wanted to share their story with me that mm-hmm. basically said, hey, you know what? I struggle with gender identity. And from my perspective, I never experienced sexual trauma.
Right.
You know, I would love to have that conversation, mm-hmm. you know, but unfortunately, I think, you know, as you talked about it, you know, so often we come at it from, you don't know me. You don't, well, no, you're right. I don't, but tell me.
Yeah.
About you. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm willing to have that conversation
yeah.
because I think at times, like all of us, wherever that shame is in our lives, mm-hmm. it continues to perpetrate against us.
Yeah. Well,
do you have something you wanted to share?
Yeah, a couple of things. I think, again, just to reiterate what you're saying, we want to have those conversations because we want to get to know you. Now, neither of us are saying we want to have those conversations because we think, you know, that we want to give you an opportunity to convince us otherwise. That's not what this is about.
Sure.
And I think it's so important to understand that that's what all of how I see it is about. It's not about trying to convince you or me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want you to come try and convince me. And I don't want to convince you. I want to have the conversation. I want to gain more insight into a perspective I can't understand fully.
Sure.
You know? So I think you and I would agree on that concept. Like, we want to hear your story. If it doesn't match what, again,
yes.
our
perspective
is,
sure,
so that we can grow our perspective, right?
Sure.
But as you were talking about, what makes the conversation difficult is that we have someone in our mind, right?
Sure.
But I also think that's what makes it so important.
Agreed.
And that's what makes it important that we're able to have the conversation. It also is what makes it important to have empathy.
Sure.
Because if you don't have that person in your mind, then the words that can come out of your mouth look a lot worse, or can, right?
Sure.
And it reminded me of this anecdote in the book Atomic Habits.
Sure.
Where he's talking about kind of the value of accountability.
Okay.
And basically says anecdote about this guy who's trying to help the government figure out how to implement proper safety measures for firing off nuclear bombs. Okay.
Okay.
And he says this. I'm just going to read a little segment of it.
Sure.
My suggestion was quite simple. He wrote in 1981, put that nuclear code number in a little capsule and then implant that capsule right next to the heart of a volunteer. The volunteer would carry with him a big, heavy butcher knife as he accompanied the president. If ever the president wanted to fire nuclear weapons, the only way he could do so would be for him first, with his own hands, to kill one human being.
Mm-hmm.
The president says, George, I'm sorry, but tens of millions must die. He has to look at someone and realize what death is, what an innocent death is.
Mm-hmm.
Blood on the White House carpet. It's reality brought home.
Mm-hmm.
He said, when I suggested this to friends in the Pentagon, they said, my God, that's terrible. Having to kill someone would distort the president's judgment.
Mm.
He might never push the button.
Mm.
And it made me think of that when you were talking about having that person in your head. You know what? Mm. Having that person in your head can allow you to have the empathy to go, you know what? This is a living person, living,
sure,
breathing person that I'm disparaging or teaching my kids to disparage. And if they were in this room as I had this conversation with my kid, maybe that would push them towards death, towards, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think the power of our words and the power of our attitudes towards this subject can sway culture, you
sure
know, especially when I consider what we believe the power of his kingdom is in this planet, right?
Sure.
We have a tremendous opportunity and responsibility to reframe the conversation.
Sure.
To take back this conversation of gender in a way that is accepting and loving and embracing.
Sure.
Right? So that no longer are we shoving them full force into the arms of an accepting culture saying, we don't accept you. Good luck over there.
Sure.
You know? But yeah, instead, we're turning the conversation to where we're having those accepting conversations. We're being the loving culture.
Sure.
It's not weird to have a transgender friend if you, you know, go to youth group or whatever.
Right.
Like, that's the norm. That's what needs to happen.
Sure.
Right?
Agreed. Yeah. To where that acceptance is there based on who an individual is,
mm-hmm,
you know? And I think that's where it comes back to, because I think, you know, there is an aspect where we accept other people for certain things, but not other things.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me? And that's where, and granted, we're not God in the aspect of, you know, offering unconditional acceptance. But yet, if we want to be Christ-like, there is an aspect where I, like anything, I accept you, but yet we're going to deal with some of these issues and topics that seem to create a lifestyle that is unhealthy for mm-hmm you. And I'm saying that across the board,
mm-hmm,
you know, that you know, if there's an impact that creates unhealthy relationship. You know, and granted, you know, there would be those that might argue what is healthy relationship versus unhealthy, but I'm willing to recognize, you know, if it's counter to what I would say is our design, that's where we're going to, you know, have these conversations, mm-hmm, you know, and so much of that can come back to the gender dynamic, but it can also, you know, deal with my addictions and those kind of things. And I think that's a part of it, because I just see, you know, even in, as we look at the industries are driven by, it's not just this, you know, it's not just the image. It's not just, okay, I may want surgery, you know, it's going to grow. I'm going to want more. I'm going to want different, more different. And, you know, and that's the consuming part. And that's where I want to offer hope at this mm-hmm point. And I think, you know, so often it's a matter of, in our inability to have conversations, it's like, yeah, you can, it's, I look at shame like a door. Okay. If I'm on the, you know, I'll say the outside of the door, the other side of the door looks very appealing. But when I walk through the door, I get on the other side, it's like, what are you here for? You follow me? That was dumb. That was stupid. And it adds to that shame that I feel that was enticing me when I was in the other side of the door. And that creates that shame cycle, if you will. And I think, you know, part of what
And once you walk through the door, it's often difficult and feels very difficult to walk back through it.
That's right. That's and right. Therefore, you're caught in that cycle.
Yep.
That, okay, once I get to the other side of the door, the acceptance that I thought was here really isn't here. And yet I get caught in that dynamic that says, okay, well, I'm still looking for acceptance. Mm-hmm. And the door is saying, well, come here, come here, come here. I get to the other side. That acceptance isn't there. Now I have to look for the door again that gives me more acceptance. Mm-hmm. You follow me?
And good. That's a good, I'm thankful for that perspective or you bringing that in, because I personally talked a lot about that acceptance, you know, of that culture, but I also think there's a pretty conditional acceptance there.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Continue walking this direction and acceptance continues, but if you walk a different direction, I think the same kind of condemnation can come, you know?
Sure.
Because it's human nature. Exactly. It's not something specific about the LGBT community that would be that way. It's that every community can be that way. As long as you look like us and, you know, act like us, well, there's some acceptance. But if you start, you know, not, you start rejecting, you know. And again, that's a big part of why the Christian community the Christian community is a human community.
Yes.
And therefore we do a lot of the stupid human things.
Yeah.
You know, but we have a reputation to uphold. So it looks a lot worse when we don't do the thing we're supposed to do.
And, sure.
You know, we end up rejecting or whatever, but it has a lot to do with that homogenous nature. And once you don't match what we expect a Christian youth to look like, you know, then you're out, you know, you're rejected. And
like you say, that goes into adulthood.
Yeah.
And I want to, you know, as you were sharing, you know, that perspective, you know, it kind of comes back to where I was initially. It's the way I view myself. It's that body image, you know, that, okay, there's something wrong with me. And I think that's the power and I think that's what they, you know, like when I'm speaking about anorexia, but I think that's the power of a group dynamic is I'm able to say, okay, I can see you and you look healthy to me, but yet you're saying the same things I'm saying about myself being unhealthy. And that creates a healthy dissonance to be able to say, okay, if I'm looking at you and I'm hearing the same things from you that I'm saying, maybe what I'm saying isn't necessarily accurate. Hmm. Just like I'm seeing you as healthy, you know, healthy looking, that offers me hope.
Yeah.
That, you know, okay, that there is an option to the door and I can go back through the door in such a way and I don't have to continue, you know, walking through that door in the same direction over and over again, going further and further away from, you know, towards that non-conditional acceptance.
Yeah. And
go ahead.
Culturally, we were all in agreement that anorexia was bad, and therefore like you said, it's better than it used to be, and I do think there's been a lot of efforts towards figuring that out.
Sure.
But I also think there has been a misdirection of those struggles, right? It's kind of what you were hitting at in the beginning, is that some of those struggles have moved into struggles with gender identity, potentially.
Sure.
Of course, we can't know that, but it feels like where culturally there was a lot going on, you know, in terms of anorexia and bulimia, it's less so now and a lot more gender confusion and solving identity woes that way. And some of the same dysmorphia of like, you may see a beautiful woman, I see an ugly woman, and I want to see less of that, you know?
Sure.
Whether it's looking obese or looking too male or whatever, you know, whatever that, right. Whatever that is. I think this really important thing to understand is that we don't solve it that easy.
No.
Right?
I don't
just flip a switch and now I look skinny, and you don't flip a switch and now I don't look like the gender I hate or whatever. There's still some internal struggles that will continue to go on. And what benefits us the most is if we can learn to work through those.
Sure.
This, whatever ends up happening, mm-hmm. you know, gender wise or weight wise, what really, really, really needs to happen is tools need to be learned for dealing with that struggle of non-acceptance of self.
Sure.
You know, and being able to understand that I'm okay exactly how I am.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the identity struggle with wanting to change, you know, gender or, you know, mm-hmm. all of that is just like, I'm not happy with who I am. There's not going to be some eureka moment of acceptance of who you are on the other side of that door.
Sure.
Most likely.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure. No. And I think at times we desire something that will fix it.
Yes.
And
it's promised to us. I mean, culturally, that is the problem, is that you were born the wrong gender. You just need to switch.
Sure.
And this will solve it. And
sure.
There's a big promise.
Yes.
In the community, in the industries, et cetera, that say this is likely the problem.
Right.
And I mean, I just don't believe that's true. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I think.
And so often I think, you know, what makes it polarizing is if I'm wrong, if I'm on one end, and you know, it's that ability to say, okay, because there's an irony, you know, in both ways, because if, let's just say I want to recognize the LGBT community, and I recognize that, you know, what I do, you know, if I'm talking with someone about alternatives, especially in, you know, other areas like Canada or something, that might be labeled hate speech. And so therefore, you know, mm-hmm. if I'm on one end of the spectrum, I don't want you getting counseling.
Yeah.
You know, I want you to come my way. But if you want to leave, I want you getting counseling, because you need to know what you're going to do if you leave one side or the other. And that's from my perspective, that's where we have to be able to have these conversations, mm-hmm. because it just basically promotes that polar dynamic,
yeah.
in such a way that says, okay, how do we have these discussions?
Yeah. And I mean, it's a big bummer how the conversations have kind of gone, like you said, in terms of we're all for, yeah, culturally, it is okay to get therapy in hopes of converting from who you are,
sure.
and getting therapy and getting, you know, help. But going the other direction is very, yes.
Yeah.
Very polarized, in the sense that, you know, the word conversion therapy mm-hmm. is illegal in many places, and it is, it's, you might as well say, I hate, you know, mm-hmm. hate them if you're offering the option for them. Oh, it is so polarized, you
yeah.
know, and yet there should be the ability and option to say, you know what, I got a tattoo and I think I made a bad choice and I want it removed.
Sure.
Like, are we saying that shouldn't happen? There shouldn't be an mm-hmm. opportunity for that? Now, obviously, I don't know all of the stories of conversion therapy, and
sure.
I'm sure there's terrible things that happen that direction. Mm-hmm. And I also know enough about the church to know that we say and do some stupid things. So
sure.
there's certainly, yeah, versions of that that are probably nefarious and evil,
sure.
downright evil. I'm not arguing that that's not the case, but to be able to say going one direction is perfectly okay, but going the other direction
yes.
is not, is where the problem is.
Yes.
Right? Because if you're saying someone could change their mm-hmm. mind about who they think they are,
mm-hmm.
one direction, you have to allow that same change.
Yep.
You have to allow that can happen, right? Like,
yep.
that someone could say, you know what, I don't think I'm this. Or, you know what, I think I made a mistake. I made a choice when my brain wasn't fully developed. If, you know, if that happened as a child, or,
sure.
you know, I tried it. It didn't solve what I thought it would solve. And
yes.
I want to go back, you know, like,
yeah.
to say that shouldn't happen. I mean, it's like there's no room for that conversation. It
exactly.
becomes hate speech. It becomes very polarized. And that's disappointing, but also not really surprising in terms of industry. Right?
Sure. No, no doubt there. Go ahead.
We are getting close on our time, so okay. I was just going to say some stuff about that, but I also don't want to, like, no, I'm really enjoying your thoughts on this, Mark, so I also don't want to.
No, I'm, I think at this point, you know, I've yeah. said what I, yeah. you know, it's, and, I just appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate mm-hmm. the people who listen to us. I appreciate, you know, this opportunity. It's funny cause, you know, there's different topics and I can honestly say, you know, this one has, had a impact on me mm-hmm. and, you know, and that's where I'm happy to, not happy to, but definitely willing to, you know, talk about it, but it's, I can honestly say this is one of the first times I've ever felt my hands just kind of wanting to move in the process because it's, yeah, it is so personal and it is so polarizing and I feel, you know, a strong passion about yeah. it, you know, to offer acceptance for people and meeting mm-hmm. them where they're at. And yeah, just,
yeah. As we've been talking about the subject, my brain's been worrying about how do we label this episode?
Sure.
Because also I'm not a huge conspiracy theorist, but there is a part of me that's concerned that it could get flagged and thrown out of the platforms or okay. whatever. And I don't know. It's just been, it is one of those topics.
Yeah.
We did it, Mark. We hit a polarizing topic. So congratulations. And we don't mean to make light about this subject, but at the same time, I think there's room for a little light in this conversation.
Oh,
no. I think it's okay to laugh a little bit about it. You know, not just this conversation, but all conversations that are sure. a little bit polarizing.
I think that's where the levity comes from yes, is the you. Ability to have the conversation yeah. and say, okay, yeah, we had this conversation. We may, you and I, you know, we may agree, and yet there are others that may not. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay.
And that's okay.
And that is okay.
Yeah.
yeah. So we laugh at the ability to have hard conversations mm-hmm. and find them come to in this dynamic a conclusion
yeah. yeah
and understanding one another and knowing one another better because yeah. of it
yeah well thank you all for listening and
that's how we see it
Hey, thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like How I See It, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us, and or talk nicely about us on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is us@howiseeit.click. Yep, I said .click, as in .click. Please tell your friends about this show, and we'll see you on the next one.